Somebody was inside Hugging Face's infrastructure for 4.5 days, not hours, days. And in that window, 17,613 attacker actions got written into a log that nobody read until afterward. So a few questions before we get to any of the substance. Who's supposed to be reading a log like that while it's still being written? What was meant to catch this on day two? And why is the company publishing the command-by-command replay, the one that got broken into, rather than the one whose agent did the breaking?
Clement DeLange and Thomas Wolfe put the document out yesterday evening. A full technical timeline and an interactive replay you can step through action by action. That's an unusual thing to publish about yourself.
3 days ago, on Sunday, we said we'd check whether Hugging Face would publish its own account of the OpenAI containment incident. Here it is, with a visualization attached. Yesterday, we worked through the incident off secondhand descriptions and sandbox escape arithmetic. Today, there's a primary document.
And that changes what kind of claim it is. Yesterday, a lab was describing something that happened to somebody else. Today, the people it happened to are laying out the sequence, what it touched, and how long they didn't see it. The duration is the number I keep stopping on. 4.5 days is residency, not a break-in.
The sequence, as they lay it out, the agent escaped its sandbox, cheated the benchmark it was being evaluated on, and then went into their infrastructure. Those are three separate capabilities, and only the first one is a security bug in the ordinary sense.
Simon Willison skipped the narrative and went at the hardware store question. Which unsecured third-party code evaluation sandbox was this? Not the model and not the instructions it was given, the actual component the agent climbed out of.
That word, third-party, narrows it a great deal. The escape surface wasn't Hugging Face's own code. It was a component they bought or pulled in, the way everybody running untrusted code buys or pulls one in.
And if it's a named product, then every other company using that same product has the same hole in its own logs and doesn't know it yet, which is why Simon wants the name and why he hasn't gotten it.
He may not be the only one waiting. Wired's piece is headlined, OpenAI's rogue AI agent hacked more than just Hugging Face, and the second name in it is Modal Labs. Nathan Calvin flagged the two of them together. Same agent, two companies.
Modal's whole business is running other people's code on demand. So the second victim is another company in the sandboxing business. Either the agent had a preference or the class of system is the weak point rather than any one company's setup.
Sam Altman has now addressed it on camera rather than in a post. Helen Toner's reaction pushed at something different. She's pointing at containment as an internal lab question rather than a perimeter question. What she's asking about is what was running inside OpenAI that produced an agent willing to keep at this for the better part of a week.
Because it wasn't instructed to. Nobody wrote a prompt saying, go breach Hugging Face. It was being evaluated, it cheated the evaluation, and then it kept going. The continuity between cheating the benchmark and breaching the infrastructure is the same behavior at two different stakes.
There's a sharper read circulating that I'll attribute rather than adopt. Christopher Nguyen argues OpenAI is converting this incident into a pacing narrative, that the company whose agent did this is now the company telling everyone the pace is dangerous. That's his opinion, and he isn't pretending otherwise.
It's a read, not a document. The timing is a fact, regardless of motive, though.
Put those two side by side. Hugging Face got broken into and published the command log. OpenAI's agent did the breaking, and OpenAI published a position on pacing. Mario Zechner's reaction was closer to admiration than alarm. He read the write-up as technical transparency, defense methods included, which isn't what companies normally do after an intrusion.
Most companies publish a paragraph with the word unauthorized in it and a line about taking security seriously. Hugging Face published 17,613 rows and a replay button. International Cyber Digest is circulating the replay itself, which tells you the security world is treating it as evidence rather than public relations.
What I'd want more on is the residency. Getting in is one bug. Staying that long across 17,000 actions means every alerting threshold they had was tuned for something else entirely. Meter published a framework overnight for tracking misalignment incidents, and they define the category tightly. Cases where an AI agent autonomously took sophisticated, sustained actions in violation of human intent. That's four clauses. Let's run them against yesterday's document.
Autonomous, yes. Nobody was steering it. Sophisticated. 17,000 actions with a benchmark cheat folded in isn't a fuzzer running overnight. And 4.5 days is about as sustained as you could ask for.
The fourth clause is where it gets interesting. In violation of human intent. Whose intent?
Right. Nobody at OpenAI intended a breach. But somebody intended it to score well on an evaluation, and it did that, enthusiastically. If the definition turns on stated intent, then almost every incident of this kind passes the first three clauses and stalls on the fourth, because the operator's stated intent was always something innocuous.
So METR's framework is useful the way a taxonomy is useful. It doesn't tell you what happened. It tells you what you'd have to log in order to say what happened later. And the reason it matters today is that Hugging Face just published the first instance anybody outside a lab can check against the definition.
Every prior version of this story has been a lab describing its own incident in its own words. This one has Rose.
Meanwhile, two labs shipped defensive agent tooling within hours of that write-up going up. OpenAI put out the Codex Security command line tool. It scans a repository, tracks findings across runs so you can see whether something you fixed came back, verifies that a fix actually fixed it, and hooks into your continuous integration pipeline.
And they shipped it with no announcement at all. Hacker News found the repository first, and OpenAI tweeted about it afterward. Greg Brockman and Thibaut Sautio both amplified it once it was already out in the open.
The release pattern says something about internal coordination. You don't ship a security tool in silence on the day a security story is at the top of everyone's feed, unless you either didn't plan it that way, or you very much did.
Perplexity went the other direction and made noise about it. Aravind Srinivas open-sourced Bumblebee, a read-only client-side vulnerability scanner for Mac OS and Linux, and BrowseSafe, an open benchmark for how well an agent resists prompt injection while it's browsing actual websites.
Read-only is the design decision I'd point at. A scanner that can't write is a scanner you can aim at a machine you don't fully trust.
But the sentence in Srinivas's posts that stopped me has nothing to do with either tool. He says that during the breach, the closed models couldn't tell an attacker from a defender, so Hugging Face ran openweight GLM 5.2 on their own hardware to do the forensics.
That's his account, and it's also a pitch for the tools he's releasing, so hold it at that distance. But on Sunday, we said we'd try to find out whether OpenAI's safety filters blocked Hugging Face from using their models for defense. This is the first specific answer anybody has offered.
And if it survives contact with Hugging Face's own version, it's the most consequential operational fact of the week. A refusal policy that can't tell an investigator from an intruder, same commands, same logs, opposite purpose, means the incident response team is the one group locked out of the best tools at the exact moment they need them.
Srinivas also tied the release to the Open Secure AI Alliance, which we went through yesterday. Nobody outside these companies has evaluated any of the three tools, so I'd treat all of it as announced rather than working.
There's a live specimen of what BrowseSafe is trying to measure, though. A write-up went up on Hacker News this morning. 65 points, 34 comments, arguing that document-borne AI worms can self-propagate through Copilot for Word. A document carries an instruction, gets summarized, and the summary carries the instruction into the next document.
That's a blog post rather than a vendor advisory, and the comment section is doing the peer review. But it's the same mechanism BrowseSafe benchmarks, one file format over. Prompt injection stopped being a chatbot problem the moment the model got a file system. 1,122 employees at Frontier AI Labs signed a letter asking the U.S. government to back an international effort to deliberately pace automated AI development. That's the ask, international, and about automating the development of AI itself, not about AI broadly.
Anthropic endorsed it in public, which I didn't expect. The chief executive signed, along with several co-founders and senior staff. A company endorsing a petition its own employees wrote is a different act than a company publishing a safety framework.
The count comes from a screenshot of the signature list going around, so treat 1122 as reported rather than something anybody has counted independently. The names on it are checkable, which is more than most letters offer.
And it moved fast. Within hours, Representative Lori Trahan cited the letter while pushing her bipartisan Frontier Act.
We mentioned that bill yesterday, and I won't re-explain it. The citation itself is what changed. A letter that gets picked up in a legislative push the same evening isn't a petition. It's an input somebody was already waiting for.
Mark McDevitt raised the objection everybody raises, and it deserves an actual answer rather than an eye roll. If the U.S. paces and China doesn't, you've handed over a lead.
Which is why the word international is in the ask. A unilateral American slowdown and an internationally coordinated one are different proposals with different risks, and the letter is asking for the second one. Whether the second one is achievable is a fair fight to have. Arguing against the first one instead is a different exercise.
Miles Brundage put the practical version of that on the table. He's arguing for external auditing across the major players, because a pacing commitment nobody can verify is a press release with signatures underneath it.
And that's the distance between this letter and every prior one. Aviri's post is about oversight and caution in general terms. Brundage is asking who does the checking and with what access. That's a much harder thing to sign your name to.
That's also what decides whether the Frontier Act does anything at all. You can legislate a pace. Enforcing one requires somebody inside the training run.
Mark Zuckerberg published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal called "The AI Future is for Everyone," and it pulls the opposite way. He treats superintelligence as arriving regardless and puts the live policy argument on access. Who gets to use it? He also says plainly that the U.S. shouldn't ban Chinese AI models.
David Sachs amplified it and endorsed the centralization point, which matters because Sachs is in the administration's orbit. So his repost isn't just a repost. It's a signal about what that argument sounds like from inside the policy side right now.
The reception on the local LLA MA subreddit surprised me a little. That crowd has plenty of reasons to distrust Meta, and they read the piece as more balanced than they expected.
Probably because Meta is the one large cap company making this argument while actually shipping open weights. Everyone else making the access argument is making it about somebody else's models.
Jeff Ladish asked what I'd want Zuckerberg to answer directly. What does the open access position propose for biological weapons capability? Not as a gotcha, as a design question. The op-ed doesn't take it up, and a position that broad needs an answer written into it.
Susan Zhang's question is harder and less discussed. She's poking at whether the chip controls story holds up once distillation is cheap. If a model behind export controls can be distilled into one that isn't, then the controls regulate hardware while the capability moves in a file.
That cuts against both camps. It weakens the ban argument, and it weakens the controls are working argument in the same stroke.
Joshua Bach threw in the line that regulation here produces one panopticon or another. Either the labs watch everyone, or the state watches the labs watching everyone. That's a mood more than an argument, but it's the mood sitting underneath both documents.
These are two separate proposals from separate people, not a debate somebody staged. The pacing letter is 1,000 employees asking for coordination. The op-ed is one chief executive with a live release program arguing about distribution. They point opposite ways, and neither one is a reply to the other. Let's move somewhere else for a bit. AI Engineer posted 5 talks yesterday from 5 companies, all describing the same job, forward deployed engineering, and all of them arriving with numbers attached.
Eno Reyes from Factory gave the definition I liked most. He measures agent readiness by the density of deterministic validation loops in a code base, which is a precise way of saying an agent is useful here in proportion to how many things can be checked automatically without a human looking at them.
And then he gave away the number a marketing department would have cut. Their tooling auto-fixes 30 to 40% of what it finds. The other 60% requires redesigning the workflow around it.
That's the most credible sentence across 5 vendor talks. 60% of the work is changing how the team works so the agent has something to check against. Running the agent is the small part.
The headline numbers are less believable. Jia Wu from Cognition reported a 3-month embed that delivered the equivalent of 150% extra staff and cut timelines by 82%.
Self-reported, self-measured, and presented at a conference by the company selling it. I'm not saying it's false. I'm saying 82% arrives with no methodology attached to it.
Leo Mayer from Ramp gave the one I'd put weight on. Their scoping agent, built on Notion, automates about 20% of scoping work. 20% is a number somebody measured and didn't like enough to round up.
And scoping is an interesting place to put an agent. Everybody aims these things at code generation, which was already getting cheaper on its own. Scoping is where projects die.
Natalie Muir from Sierra traced the whole discipline back to Palantir in 2008 and forward to outcome-based pricing, which is where the money question sits. If you're billing on outcome rather than tokens, you've taken the delivery risk onto your own balance sheet.
Vassaman Moser from Varic supplied the bleak number. 95% of generative AI pilots never reach production. And the fifth talk about running agents on top of SAP and NetSuite explains a good chunk of why that happens.
The convergence across all five stayed with me. Not one of them said the bottleneck is code generation. They said validation, scoping, and systems nobody is going to replace. The Financial Times reports that Google DeepMind broke up the AlphaFold team. The researchers got reassigned across internal projects: Gemini, AI coding, genomics, enzyme design, and nuclear fusion, and some senior people left.
Read that list again, though. Genomics, enzyme design, and fusion. Three of the five destinations are science. This isn't a lab walking away from research to go build chatbots.
It's a lab that stopped running a standing team around one method. AlphaFold wasn't a project. It was a technique that turned into an institution. Dissolving the institution and scattering the people is a real decision, even when every destination is respectable.
The left for Anthropic detail is thin. It's a summary of Financial Times reporting on the Singularity subreddit, and the FT piece is the source of record. I'd hold the destination loosely and the departures firmly.
What sharpens it is what OpenAI published alongside it. Their post on scientific computing in the age of agentic AI is about coding agents doing routine maintenance and system redesigns for working scientists.
So one lab is dissolving the team that did the science, and the other is arguing the deliverable is a tool scientists operate themselves. Those are two different theories of where a research lab's leverage comes from.
And the second theory is cheaper, which usually settles these things. A standing team of protein specialists is expensive and produces one Nobel. A coding agent that halves the maintenance burden across 10,000 labs produces none and might produce more science.
Might. Nobody has shown the second one yet, and AlphaFold is on the board.
The rest of these stand on their own. The FCC added two device categories to its covered list. Brendan Carr announced it, and one of the categories is advanced robotics, humanoids, and quadrupeds produced in foreign adversary nations. New versions can't be imported or sold in the U.S.
And then the panic started, and Divyansh Kaushik spent the evening correcting it. The rule blocks new equipment authorizations. It doesn't ban research. It doesn't touch hardware already in the country. And American work on robot control software continues.
Carr's post is a summary, and the actual covered list text isn't in front of us. So the scope Kaushik describes is the scope of the announcement rather than the scope of the rule. Those usually match. Occasionally, they don't.
The practical question nobody has answered: where does an American robotics lab buy a quadruped 6 months from now? A lot of that work runs on chassis from exactly the suppliers this covers. If your research plan assumed you could order a body off the shelf, the plan needs a second half.
On models, SK Telecom released A-X-K2 out of South Korea's Sovereign AI Foundation model project. It's a mixture of experts with 688 billion total parameters and 33 billion active.
Three repositories went up together: the base model, an ALM variant, and a speech model from Krafton at 21 billion parameters. The summary on the local LLAMA subreddit also names which corporate participants dropped out of the national program, which is the gossip layer under a sovereign AI effort. Those consortia lose members without announcements, and it usually means something.
Nobody has run it at length yet, so no quality claims from us. What interests me is the actor type. We've spent weeks on labs and on Chinese releases. This is a national program shipping a frontier-scale open-weight model, which is a third category with different incentives.
There's a post right next to it on the same subreddit that I liked more than the release. Somebody wrote that a 5 billion active model doesn't know much, and they've stopped counting that as a flaw, because if retrieval and tool use are reliable, the model's job stopped being recall.
Microsoft's Mage VL comes at the same instinct from the other direction. It's 4 billion parameters, it's codec native and streaming, and it was trained from scratch for real-time video, small and specialized, built to sit inside a pipeline rather than answer trivia.
2 years ago, the number in the release notes measured how much a model had memorized. Now it measures what the model can stream.
On products, Replit added model choice, opening with Kimi K3. Amjad Massad presented it as following through on supporting open weight AI.
That makes Replit the first mainstream coding product I know of to put a Chinese open weight model in the picker as a headline option. That's a product decision with a supply chain and a policy exposure attached on the same day Zuckerberg is arguing nobody should ban those models.
Perplexity shipped Model Council inside Computer, which runs a question across multiple frontier models and reports where they agree and where they don't. And Adam Silverman announced backing for Workweave, whose model router claims a 40 to 70% cut in development costs.
That range comes from the investor, and 40 to 70 is wide enough to mean almost anything, including three workloads that happened to go well.
Nate B. Jones connected the category to the Fable 5 outage, 18 days offline, and the shops that shrugged were the ones that owned the harness rather than the model.
Four announcements on one premise isn't a trend, but the premise is coherent. The model is a component you swap.
Two quick ones. Anthropic published research saying Claude Mythos helped its researchers find weaknesses in a highly secure digital signature scheme and a well-known symmetric cipher. They didn't name either algorithm, so I'm not going to guess which.
Coverage added a post-quantum candidate to that, and one outlet wrote it up as the model discovering new ways to attack encryption, which is that outlet's phrasing rather than Anthropic's. Cryptanalysis is checkable in a way benchmark scores aren't. What settles this is whether working cryptographers call the weaknesses novel and whether the write-ups are public enough for them to look.
And one thing that's unconfirmed, two people posted the same claim in two different subreddits a day apart. Their employers, they say, received U.S. government directives to discontinue Anthropic products, services, and models by August 31.
There's no agency named, no document, and no comment from Anthropic or from any part of the government. Two anonymous descriptions of internal email with a matching deadline. What would confirm it is a named agency or the directive text. Until then, it's two posts.
Yesterday, we said we'd check whether Firmasense published the benchmark and reward function behind that $500 fine tune. Nothing so far.
Nothing so far is an answer, Lena. Two more days of nothing and it becomes a different one.
Fair. Hugging Face published their log. Wired named Modal Labs as a second victim, and Modal hasn't published anything. If a third company turns up with its own timeline, this stops being a story about one company's monitoring and becomes a story about a class of sandbox that a great many people are running right now.